This is the Goalkeepers Union Podcast.
Hello and welcome to the Goalkeepers Union Podcast. Between the Sticks, me and Matt Beadle here with the first rounding voice of goalkeeping, Richard Lee.
Good morning, Matthew. How the devil are you today?
Not too shabby, mate. Enjoyed a first round of the FA Cup at the weekend. Always good action going on. But a round, Richard, that did you play much in the first round, or were you more a third round entrant?
I was more of a third round kind of guy. That was until later on in my career, and then I did join Brentford, who at the time were in League One. So we did have a couple of first round experiences, which weren't great, if I'm honest. Weren't great, but then obviously, thankfully, did get promoted back to the Championship, and it was then third round again. But yes, I say they weren't great. Do you know what? I do remember playing against Basingstoke in the first round, which I really enjoyed, because it was actually Ashley Bayes, the current goalkeeper coach of Wimbledon, that was in goal for Basingstoke. So it was nice to play against him. And then from memory, we lost to Aldershot in a replay. And I remember that wasn't overly pleasant. You know, we drew at home, which obviously was disappointing. Went to Aldershot in the replay. And my memory from it was, it was freezing cold. I mean, always kind of is this time of the year. Although I do believe there's a bit of a heat wave of sorts going on in England at the moment, which is a bit weird. But anyway, remember it being freezing cold. And I just remember, my memory of the first round was they used a different football, like they often do in the cup games. And honestly, it was the slipperiest football that I've ever experienced in my life. And I just remember having the warm-up, and I'm sure that goalkeepers can all appreciate this and relate to this, where it's just a bar of soap and there was nothing I could do in the warm-up. I had a few different pairs of gloves with me. None of them would grip, and it was just horrible going into the game. Away at Aldershot, going to be a tough game anyway. They were doing well, I think, in the National League at the time, and just knowing that I couldn't catch a thing. So, and we did lose. I think we lost 1-0 away, and it was, yeah, just a bit of a grim, grim night.
Yeah, I'm not a massive fan, actually, of the FA Cup balls this season and last. I think they're mitre, aren't they? And from memory, they were modelled on the classic mitre delta, but they just don't, I don't know, they don't look that great. I don't know, I don't enjoy them as much as I thought I might do with a bit of romanticism in there. But FA Cup replays, let's just quickly talk about that. Your take on FA Cup replays and the fact that, well, they don't exist anymore.
Which I don't mind. I don't mind that at all, if I'm honest. I know it's kind of, no doubt, I'm going to throw this back to you in a minute, and Matt Beadle, who loves a bit of nostalgia, the old school, you'd have 12 replays if you could. Just keep replaying until you win. Now, I think when you're playing, and naturally, there are so many games in the calendar. I sound a bit like Pep Guardiola now, but there's so many games in the calendar anyway. You've obviously got your 46 league games. Of course, now with the, it's not called, I always forget the name now, but the Papa John's, is it at the moment, or has it changed again?
It's the something leased. No, what's it called? This is terrible, isn't it? What
leasing,
is it called?
The leasing. This is so bad. We're recording.
We had an issue with leasing last week.
Leasing.com.
With the Reading Stadium. What is it? It's something to do with direct leasing or something like that. I'm sure it is. I'll carry on talking. I'll look it up.
I mean, they're going to be delighted that they sponsored this cup, given that we can't even remember the name of it. But anyway, you've got those games. You've obviously got the FA Cup. You've got the League Cup as well. And of course, with replays, it just means that effectively you are every Saturday, Tuesday, which isn't bad. Like, it's quite nice as a goalkeeper to get into a run of games and it's just game after game after game. I didn't mind that. But then at the same time, I think, and again, goalkeepers will appreciate this, is that having that week to build up to another game, you can do different forms of training. So I preferred it when it was Saturday, Saturday, Saturday. But of course, it's this sort of period of the season where there's so many cup games. And then it sort of goes quiet second half of the season. After Jan, a lot of the times, with respect, a lot of the League One, League Two teams are knocked out of the FA Cup by that point, knocked out of the League Cup, potentially knocked out of the leasing cup. And then you kind of don't have any cup games second half of the season. So you sort of have this glut of them building up to Christmas, and then it seems to go a bit quiet. So no, I'm more than happy now that they have binned the idea of the FA Cup replay.
Yeah, there's people shouting at the radio or their headsets right now. Nothing to do with leasing at all. Not anything to do with leasing in the name of the EFL trophy. The Bristol Street Motors trophy. There you go.
Ah, well, there you go. Look, there you go. We've given some love then to Bristol Street Motors. There you go. We've kind of, in a very bad way, we've highlighted it. Maybe this is a positive.
On with the show.
Let's do it.
We are going to start, I think for the first time this season, Richard, at the St Mary's Stadium. Southampton 1, Everton 0. And Aaron Ramsdale Big saves from Oriol Mangala and Michael Keane. It was a first win and a first clean sheet for Ramsdale and the Saints.
Indeed. And like you say, a couple of big saves here. The one that I want to highlight in particular is the one down low to his left. The save from Michael Keane, I just thought was outstanding. Movement prior to the save, gets himself into great position, but it's the speed at which he gets down and gets... It's going right in the corner, you know, and this is one that... I know I make this comment a lot, but this certainly applies to this particular save. There's not a lot of goalkeepers that can make this save. You know, the speed at which Aaron Ramsdale does move. And I mentioned positionally because I think it's one of them where it's being whipped in like it is. It's always how far across the goal do you get? Where do you actually set? And the speed at which you can get down to your left. And not only that, it was then the creativity after that point, because the ball's there and you're kind of considering or wondering which side of the post it's going to end up on. And if you watch it again in slow motion, like, he's very quick to react and effectively shovel it the other side of the post. I just thought there was so much about this save that was world class.
Good stuff. Is this a turning point for Aaron Ramsdale and Southampton? International fixtures as well, aren't they, coming up in November? Will he be involved in the squad named by Lee Carsley, which is obviously a little bit weird, but we won't dwell on that right now. We'll move over to Molineux, Wolves 2, Crystal Palace 2. We'll start with Dean Henderson here. And we spoke about a head save from Nick Pope a couple of weeks ago. This was another head save of a different variety from Henderson, from the shot from Pablo Sarabia.
Yeah, love this. Absolutely love this. Just for the speed at which he came out. I think he's seen the situation. The ball's come in. It was a very good first touch from the attacking player. So he has to be so quick. And, you know, at the point of impact, you actually look how much ground he's covered, how big he's made himself. And it's a horrible feeling, by the way. And again, we've all had one of these where it hits you square in the face. But if you freeze frame it at the point at which the attacker is taking the shot, he's so close, he's so big, it's so difficult to beat him at that point. And of course, it hits him square in the face. But yeah, I thought this was a top, top save.
Jose Sarr at the other end was fuming for the opener. It was Jorgen Strand Larsen, I think, wasn't it, the attacker, who took the ball away from his grasp from the cross that was floated in. You heard him make the call and you then saw him gesticulate towards Strand Larsen when the goal went in from Trevor Chalabar. And the disallowed winner that was scored from Jean-Philippe Mateta, I'm pretty sure this is going to be a straightforward answer from you, but foul or no foul?
Yeah, that's a foul. Of course it's a foul. And do you know what? I thought Joe Hart did a really good job of explaining it on Match of the Day, where you watch it again. At the time, you know, it's one of them for me. I know that they're asking, oh, did he have it fully under control? I know that was the question, but of course he didn't, but there was a reason he didn't, and that was the attacking player. Sarr gets there first, the attacking player gets there second, collides with Sarr, which is why then he isn't able to hold the ball. So, yeah, a very simple decision. Yeah, I don't know if there was too much discussion around this, but there certainly shouldn't have been, because without that player nudging his elbow in the way that he did, then of course he would have held on to this football. So for me, a clear foul. And of course, he'll be disappointed with the opener. So as much as he would have been frustrated with his own player taking it out of his hands, there's a couple of bits here. One is communication, which I think we're going to talk about a few times in this pod, because there's a few good examples in this pod where communication, but then it is so difficult. You're in a loud stadium. Even if he's screaming, keeper's ball, does the player on his own team hear that in time when they're already making the movement to get their head on the ball? Secondly, I don't think it ever quite gets to the height to be able to come. And I think once he's sort of decided to come, then of course it's difficult to stop halfway and retreat. You don't really get a chance to do that. So he's decided to come the whole way. And it's unfortunate for him that either his player hasn't heard him, or again, it never quite gets to the height that he wants it to be able to claim it. And then, of course, after that moment, it's sort of the worst case scenario. It drops to their player. Had he not have come, had he stayed in his line, then he would have had a good chance to get himself across the goal and make that second save. But in the end, it's a lovely finish on the angle. No goalkeeper in goal. And of course, it's one that he'll naturally be a little bit frustrated with.
A few more to mention from the Premier League. Not loads of action this weekend, but the Tottenham Hotspur Stadium, Tottenham 4, Aston Villa 1. Now, Villa took the lead in this game from a corner, which plenty of people had plenty of things to say about, and the fact that Guglielmo Vicario had conceded yet again from a corner. Should we be talking about this, or is this just another one of those that is what it is?
Well, it was mental. Like, I heard Roy Keane's analysis, but And again, Roy Keane was essentially saying like, oh, goalkeeper's got to do better, but I don't know how. Like, he can't, there's no goalkeeper in the world that can come for the initial ball that comes in. He's obviously having a wrestle on the goal line with the attacking player, which, of course, as a goalkeeper, you're trying to buy yourself that little bit of space, which essentially he does and makes an unbelievable save from point-blank range and keeps it out. And, of course, the guy that's on him then has an easy finish. That is what it is. But I actually thought he did really well in this situation. I couldn't get what point Roy Keane was getting at. I heard a few cliches in there. I heard a command your 6-yard box. But again, you can't come for the initial ball. So I don't know what... I wish he would have explained what he could have done better. Because I actually thought in this situation, I thought the goalkeeper, I thought Vicario did very, very well. I don't know if you can shed any more light on that.
Just to be fair, the stats that were given a couple of months ago, this was back in September. And that since the start of last season, Tottenham had conceded 18 goals from set pieces. That excludes penalties, of course. That's the second worst rate in the league of teams to have featured both last season and this season. Nottingham Forest are the only team to have eclipsed them in that. It was just when I was watching it, I did think this does keep happening to Spurs. Now, again, like I said, is this just what it is and we're amplifying it more because more of an issue's been made of it over the past year or so? But is there something in this that it does seem to keep happening though?
Yeah, it does. But then I think, again, how much of a role does the goalkeeper play? Now, don't get me wrong. You know, I think you've got different types of goalkeepers that do play very differently. Some that are very, very aggressive when it comes to collecting crosses from corners, you know, and some that would rather be on their goal line and look to make the saves. You know, we spoke about David De Gea a lot previously, where clearly he was one that would maybe not come for all that many crosses, but the amount of saves he would make by staying deep and allowing defenders to deal with it. I think that this is more a question for me about whoever the, you know, the set piece coach is at Spurs, whoever does that. And that'll probably be a mixture of people in terms of how they're setting up to defend corners. Now, is Vicario the most aggressive at coming for corners? Maybe not. But like certainly with this one specifically, I just don't know what Vicario can do any differently. You know, the flick at the near post, that's certainly not Vicario's fault. There's nothing he can do there. And if anything, yeah, he can try and organise his players in the 6-yard box in the penalty area, but that's done prior. That will be, you'll work on that on a Friday when you go through set pieces and whose positions are where. Now, if a ball comes in the near post like that, it should never, ever get flicked on. There should be somebody in that area that is clearing that. And of course, you'll have your strongest players aerially in key positions. So that might be someone at the near post or just in front of the near post, kind of covering that area. Someone on the 6-yard box, because so many balls are delivered across the 6-yard box. So I think then to look at Vicario specifically, I think he's really harsh in this situation.
Speaking of set piece coaches, I don't know whether you saw this before the game yesterday between Brentford and Fulham, or Fulham and Brentford, the Richard Lee Derby, as some people might call it. Before the game yesterday, they highlighted it on Monday Night Football. Keith Andrews, the set piece coach at Brentford, was making it quite clear what they plan to do defensively from set pieces. So they had their system set out in the 18-yard box and they were going through the motions of set pieces before the game. Now, it's quite a talking point. Before, Dimitar Berbatov basically said, you know, everyone likes to innovate, everyone likes to be the first person to do these types of things. Others suggested that you were maybe showing Fulham, Brentford was showing Fulham their hand by doing these set pieces before the game. Who knows why they did it? It was the first time that it's been seen. Perhaps Brentford fans would shed some light on this and say that they do it before every game, but it was the first time certainly that I'd seen it. Any thoughts on that and the fact that they were practicing their defensive set pieces before the game?
Yeah, I mean, look, you would think this would be done in private ordinarily. Again, like you say, everyone may be trying to innovate. I think the idea now, most teams do have a specific set-piece coach, given that the amount of goals, the percentage of goals, even now in today's game that has evolved so much from, you know, 15, 20 years ago, where, again, there was a lot of goals scored from set-pieces, a lot of teams that targeted set-pieces and always turned everything into a set-piece. You know, the game certainly evolved since then, but I think now you still see it, even... you know, the proportion of goals that a team will score over a season, a large percentage will be from set pieces. So I think that that realisation, which isn't a new realisation, is one that actually we need to be exceptional in this area. I think to do it before the game, I mean, look, the argument for it would be just to make sure that it's fresh in the mind. Again, it is key. If you can be solid defensively against set pieces, then essentially, you know, unless it's individual error, essentially you're going to have to make a team break you down in order to score. You know, there's nothing more frustrating for a manager than to concede from a set piece or an individual error that happens from time to time. So, you know, that can go a long way. We'll talk about managers past and present that have always kind of built their teams around being really good when it comes to set pieces. To do it before a game, again, like I say, I think my argument for it would be just so it's fresh in the memory. Is there a counter argument? Then there'll be somebody there looking and going through them and then quickly going into the change room before the game and saying, look, they do this, they do this, they do this. Maybe. Does it make much of a difference? I don't think so. So, yeah, I don't think it's a huge deal.
It did end Fulham 2, Brentford 1. And I didn't think we were going to have anything really bar that set piece situation that we've just spoken about there to talk about on this game until the last few minutes in injury time, because it all went off. So firstly, Bernd Leno with a really good save from Fabio Carvalho just after Fulham had equalised, proved to be crucial because then Harry Wilson goes and scores the winner. But Harry Wilson's first goal, I just want to comment on too, because it was quite funny just to see the reaction from Mark Flecken when the goal went in. He was absolutely distraught. It was like something from Platoon.
He was. And I felt for him because it's a horrible moment. Like the goal as well, where there's absolutely nothing he can do. And as you turn round and he can see it's going to loop into the far top corner. And it's in slow motion, isn't it? As he goes down to his knees, head in hands, all the way down. I felt for him. I think we've all been there. And yeah, how do you react in a moment like that, especially when you know it's the winning goal as well? It's a horrible, horrible feeling. But again, absolutely nothing he could do individually.
And finally, just a couple of goalkeepers to mention here. Mark Travers, Bournemouth 2, Man City 1. Really good saves again from Jeremy Doku and Erling Haaland. Certainly doing well covering for Kepa Arrizabalaga at the moment at the Vitality. And Nottingham Forest 3, West Ham 0. So Lucas Fabianski still in place of Alphonse Areola on the losing side again. However, two incredible stops, one from Nikola Milenkovic and then from Ramon Sosa with the final touch of the game. I mean, on the losing side, so no one really remembers them, like no one will really remember the first goal that Aston Villa scored against Spurs because Spurs won 4-1, but we have to credit them here because they were two fantastic stops.
Yeah, well, I'll start with Fabianski. I thought that save at the end in particular, just a beautiful save. That's that one that... How often in a goalkeeper's career do you make a save like that? Where yeah, you make top-hand saves, of course, and there's different types of top-hand saves. But I think this, when you are absolutely at full stretch, it is going right in the top corner. His footwork's excellent, explosive, gets the hand to it, and it just grazes the bar as it goes over. I just thought this was phenomenal goalkeeping. As you say, yeah, meant very little, except on the Goalkeepers Union podcast, where, of course, we will highlight these types of saves, but a fantastic save. And you mentioned Mark Travers as well. Big well done to him because, well, firstly, unbelievable victory for them to step in again in the way that he's done many times now and perform at the level that he has. Big saves in this game to get the victory against them in the way that they did. I'm sure that he was a very, very happy man after this one.
Okay, before we move on to the EFL overview, there is something that you want to discuss, Richard. This wasn't in the running order from my end, but you've flagged this. You want to bring this up. This is Robert Sanchez in the game between Manchester United and Chelsea on Sunday.
Yeah, but I do. And because I think that, again, we've discussed him quite a lot this season already. And I've got a feeling, like last season, we discussed Rea and Ramsdale a lot, naturally. Kind of feel like Sanchez is going to be a major talking point for us this season. He has been already. And again, just for me, I watched this game and I thought it was excellent. I know that the penalty, there's been a few headlines. I see Gary Neville called him rash and this, that, the other. But watching his performance in detail, like the amount of times that he is cutting things out of source, so proactive in what he does. There's a couple of times from angles where, again, he's come out for balls that ordinarily maybe you wouldn't come out for. I just thought it was one of the best performances I've seen this season in terms of his all-round game. The penalty, yeah, could he have then maybe held back in that moment? Similarly, there was the conversation a week or two back when there was a question of should he have gone in when it was at the lad's feet against Liverpool. It was almost a count, and people are saying he should have gone for it. Well, he's done it this time, and he's still getting stick for it. Not only that, it bugged me because I get a lot of the Google alerts through. It's always interesting to get a gauge as to what the media see of a goalkeeper. And where I've got this down in my book as one of the most complete performances I've seen this season, he's getting 3 out of 10s in the paper. You know, that penalty incident goes against him. They score the penalty and he's getting 3 out of 10s, which just, I just feel at the moment there is a real narrative around him where, you know, whether it's Chelsea fans, whether it's the media, I know that a lot of the commentators don't seem to like him. They're looking for things that they don't particularly like about his performance. But I just really feel for him at the moment. Like, I know statistically he is, if you were to believe stats, he's the number one goalkeeper in the Premier League at the moment. If you're to believe the commentators, he's the worst goalkeeper in the Premier League at the moment. Now, the truth is probably somewhere in between, you know, but it just seems like there's such a disparity between maybe what I'm seeing, what a lot of goalkeeping people are seeing, and they're seeing a lot of the positive, but where he's made a few major errors or what are considered major errors, then naturally the narrative that surrounds him is the complete polar opposite. And it just probably sums up goalkeeping for me that, you know, sometimes you're almost better off being middle of the road, not necessarily making the big saves or the big interventions, but not making the big errors. So not necessarily being as effective. And then you can kind of sit quite quietly somewhere in the middle. Whereas Rob Sanchez is real extremes, where he's doing some of the best things that I see in goalkeeping. Similarly, there's a few major errors in there, and naturally the commentators will pick up on the negative and not the positive. And it was just another example of it for me at the weekend watching his game, because I really enjoyed watching him, and yet he's still getting 3 out of 10s in the paper. It just blows my mind.
It is the EFL overview. Just the Championship this weekend, because League One and League Two were in the FA Cup first round, which we will come on to. But we will cover the Championship and two top tips over again to rival a number we saw actually in the FA Cup first round. So Ainsley Pearce from Kiefer Moore in a defeat for Blackburn at home to Sheffield United. And Jamie Cumming from Zanvi Potnik in a defeat for Oxford at home to Swansea. Lawrence Vigouroux in that game, by the way, booed throughout for his time, I guess, at Swindon, which is what that was. But again, with some exhibition distribution throughout. Very impressive from him. Ivor Pandur with a triple save to preserve a point for Hull in their clash with Portsmouth. Josh Murphy, Callum Lang and Mark Mahoney all denied by the Croat. We've got one of these.
Bada boom, bada bing. It's only a keeper keeper.
So very rarely, if ever, have we said on the Goalkeepers Union podcast, but an error from Victor Johansson. So Stoke did beat Derby, but not before he'd raced back to claw a Ben Gibson header off the line, only to pat the ball in off the post, then into his own net, and then duly find himself caught up in the netting. We see this quite a lot, don't we? To make the whole escapade a whole lot more traumatic. Freddie Woodman and the officials here done like a kipper for Bristol City's opener in their triumph over Preston. So you, Hirakawa, clearly handled the ball in a coming together with Woodman. Sadly, not noticed by anyone. And just a note on Ian Melier, Richard, leads comfortably seeing off Plymouth at Elland Road. So there were 3 goals in the space of 8 first-half minutes. A first half in which Melier had just 11 touches in total.
Yeah, they are incredibly dominant at the moment. And I'm pleased for Melier that things have settled down a bit after a lot being made not so long ago, obviously the error that he made. And then again, it's nice for a goalkeeper just to gradually build back some credit and have a few quieter games, which he's had. And they're very pleased for him. Johansson, and I've watched this several times, I really feel for him for a couple of different reasons on this one, in that you can see clearly that when he's actually come out, he knows the ball is coming through to him. And again, I mentioned earlier that communication might be the point a few times that's made in this particular podcast. Now, the difficulty, in the same way that we're talking about Jose Sarr not so long ago, similar with this, I've got no doubt that he's screened keepers at the point that the ball's coming over. But of course, you're in a stadium of 30,000 people. The defender might have already made a decision as to what they're going to do. So another day, the defender ducks under this, and this is not a talking point at all on this podcast. Of course, the moment the defender heads it, and you can see the panic as he's sprinting back. But the second reason I feel a bit for him is that he could still keep it out. Like, he's so quick getting back. And you watch it again, and he's not quite on the goal line, probably about a foot or 2 feet off the goal line. So he's got a tiny bit more time than he thinks. And I think where he's trying to be so precise in putting it out for a corner, he ends up essentially hitting it into his post, and it ends up in the net. He ends up in the net. A horrible situation. The defender's reaction says a lot as well. He's obviously annoyed, disappointed, frustrated. Johansson's frustrated that he didn't allow the ball to come through to him. I thought the manager's reaction was quite nice, just seeing this, in that, you know, sometimes they're like hands up, like not happy, gutted, kind of pointing the finger, whereas he was actually quite cool, calm, collected, like, go on, crack on with it, is what it is. You know, these things happen. So I think, as much as I understand why this is a keeper caper, at the same time, I do feel for him, in that essentially, had the defender actually listened to his shout, of course it just goes through and it's not a keeper caper. But it's one of those things.
We don't know for sure that he did shout. I'm I'm reserving judgment here. I don't know whether he definitely did, because the reaction from Ben Gibson, and I know that we don't like to see this, but he was aghast, and obviously look, and the camera was right in on him, and you could see him say, "What's he doing? What is he doing?" I know that we hate that term, "What's he doing?" But it seemed like that was genuine. I don't know. And the look from Victor Johansson was slightly sheepish. Yes, he could have kept it out. That was one of the things. I'm glad you raised that, because I was going to say to you, I feel like he could have kept that out. But the reaction from Johansson was just a little sheepish to suggest that maybe he didn't make that call.
Yeah, well, the only way we'd know is to ask him himself. Mm. I mean, I thought that might have been a little bit you'd have slipped in. Actually, we've got Victor explaining what happened in this moment, but we don't have that. Look, my gut says, you know, it's almost like it's drilled into goalkeepers now that, you know, even if there's no one around, you still shout keepers a lot of the time. So my assumption is that he did. Look, whether the defender heard it or not, again, you're in a stadium of 30,000 people. Now, I've said this before, like this was, I talk about this completely different point, but I'll make it in that sometimes goalkeeper is easier the higher up you play. And the reason I say that is the conditions, the pitches are great, the players are great, et cetera, et cetera. But one of the things also when you're playing higher up is that communication isn't necessarily needed as much, because it's such a loud arena that you're in, the players can't hear you that much. Whereas when you're playing in League One, League Two, yeah, they can hear you. You know, the crowds obviously aren't that big. All the conditions kind of tend to go against you, and it is that much more difficult and much more draining sometimes to play as a goalkeeper. So my gut says that he did shout. It just wasn't heard. And the defender, you know, Gibson, as you say, it's not a bad header back. Like, he's kind of cushioned it back and it's not into a bad area. And it's just the worst case of all situations where, yeah, then all of a sudden Johansson's sprinting back. I think that'll be the bit that probably disappoints him most, is he gets it past the post. We might touch on it in the podcast, but it's one of those moments that you look back and they're probably smiling and laughing. But yeah, is what it is. The fact they went on and got the win in the end, I'm sure it'll be quickly forgotten. And the other one you mentioned is, yeah, Freddie Woodman. I felt for him here because it's so blatant, you know, and you see it again and again, and how, I guess, the linesman's a long way away from it, and he can't necessarily see it. The referee, again, it's just one of those moments that you just wish we had VAR in the Championship.
Very good. I won't bite on that one. We'll move swiftly on to the FA Cup first round, shall we? So I've just picked out a few goalkeeping bits and pieces to mention here, okay? So matching those tips over in the Championship. So Sam Tickle keeping Wigan ahead in extra time in what proved to be a 2-0 win at Carlisle. Excellent save from Luke Armstrong in this one. Nathan Ashmore ensuring Boreham Wood took Leighton Orient to penalties with a point-blank diversion from Jialang Jayasimi. So the O's eventually went through, but a really good save from Ashmore there. Elliot Justum of Dagenham with a bunch of saves as the National League side knocked out League Two crew, notably a deflected Lewis Billington shot he palmed to safety. And Sam Howes on loan at Wolston from Leighton Orient. More of a tip onto the bar this one, but part of a double save from George McEachran and then Danny Rose as the National League side again knocked out League Two Grimsby.
Yeah, some top saves here to mention. Sam Tickle, like I say, top save this. Really good recovery, actually, because came for the initial ball, didn't quite get there. Ball's gone out wide, got himself back into a great position, and it's a top, top save up to his left. And again, I mentioned I have a lot of the Google alerts, and it's always I'm always curious to see kind of what the reaction is to some of these performances. And I see that something I see very rarely in the papers, a goalkeeper getting a 10 out of 10, but certainly Sam Tickle got a lot of love from his manager for this performance as well. Excellent performance from him. And the other ones you mentioned there, the reactions from Ashmore, phenomenal. I still can't quite work out how he's got his hands up so quickly to get it over the bar, but top save that. Sam Howes, big well done to him. Double save, good reactions with the second one in particular. And as mentioned, a top, top save from Justin as well.
Notable mentions for Jaz Singh, Dan Jessup, Matthew Hudson and Laurie Walker as they all help their clubs progress to the next round. So that's Tamworth, Kettering, Oldham, all of whom beat EFL competition, and Walker of Solihull. A quick one on Jaz Singh and Tamworth. Big win on the BBC. He was solid, a really experienced campaigner. Jaz Singh now has played plenty of games at the level, and also experienced is Chris Maxwell, who conceded the only goal of the game via a long throw from the brilliantly named Tom Tonks. Your thoughts on this one?
It's a foul.
Oh, okay. Wow. Okay. I mean, that hasn't been raised anywhere, I don't think.
But it's a foul. Like, don't get me wrong, this is an absolute nightmare for any goalkeeper to face. Like, anyone picturing this, like a throw coming in that's dipping under the crossbar. Now, my question to you is, if those attackers aren't jumping into him in the way that they are, does he keep this out?
Well, possibly, yes, but that's the game, right? That's what we've just seen. We've talked about that with Vicario and the corner coming in. That's the game, right? The long throws come in. I don't think they're doing anything too aggressive to warrant that being a foul. Now, you could argue that if Chris Maxwell, well, you know that if he doesn't touch it, it's not a goal, right? You can't score directly from a throw-in. So if he doesn't go to punch it out, no goal is given. I'm right in saying that, aren't I?
Yes.
Yeah. So correct, yeah. Could Chris Maxwell have the wherewithal in that moment to not punch it? I don't think we can start saying there that the goalkeeper has been fouled. I think the goalkeeper has to be stronger and more aggressive there.
Okay, I disagree. I think it's a foul. I just think that you're under the crossbar. You've got two attackers that are in contact with you, which is obviously moving. It doesn't take a lot of contact to miss punch a ball. You know, if your hand moves half an inch, it's going to go past you. It's going to clip you and going to go into the goal like it did. And I just think the contact, you know, they were very much going for the goalkeeper. They weren't anywhere near the ball. So for me, it's a foul. But of course, in that situation, is it going to be given as a foul when it's FA Cup? It's a smaller team against Huddersfield. Everybody wants it to be a goal. Like, I get that. But for me, it's a foul. It's as simple as that. And I'm not surprised that no one's even really called it. I bet if that went to VAR, I bet they're given a foul. That's my perspective, and I'd be really keen to hear what other people think on this. But yeah, I've watched it several times, and I'm definitely not going to change my mind on this.
Do you know what? I'm just watching it back here, not to labour on this point too much. Yeah, that's not a foul at all for me. Okay. They're not even targeting Chris Maxwell. They're just standing in the 6-yard box. It's not like they've, you know, they've pushed him, they've pulled him. They're just kind of standing around him. I do not think that is a foul.
Okay, well, we are more than welcome to agree to disagree on this one. But, I mean, look, we can put it out to a vote if you want. Put it out on Twitter or X or whatever it's called now, and let's see. I will stand by my judgment that I think this is a foul. I think there's enough contact on him to mean that he's not able to perform the action that he wanted to perform clearly. So, therefore, I am going foul.
Please do let us know on Twitter at GK Union. Hello at goalkeepersunion.net. I mean, if you can really bother to send an email for this, then crack on. Hello at goalkeepersunion.net or on our phone number 07503673020. We'll move on to celebration of the weekend. That's handed to Harbour Town goalkeeper Elliot Taylor. So step three defeated step two in Tonbridge Angels. He was really good throughout in this one. And the moment I loved was that even though 4-0 up at the time, he was still pounced upon by his teammates for a save he made from Liam Vincent in the second half. Really good save, but a great reaction.
Oh, it was brilliant. And the save itself, and obviously the initial thought that comes to mind is Gordon Banks. You know, it was that kind of up, that down low to his right. How he's got it over the bar is beyond me. I don't know how he's managed to do that, but it is just a top, top save. And like you say, even 4-0 up, the reaction from your teammates, there's nothing better as a goalkeeper when they, you know you've made a big moment and they come round and celebrate with you like that. It's so rare in a goalkeeper's career that you get the opportunity for something like that. So I bet it was absolutely buzzing after. But yeah, this is a top, top save.
Can we quickly have the goalkeeper assist klaxon, please? Tommy Simkin, yet again, providing Walsall's equaliser courtesy of Liam Gordon. They beat Bolton 2-1. Spawny goal of the week goes to Jay Bird of Exeter. So just when it looked as though their tie with Barnet was going to go to extra time at 3 apiece, he's raced clear, Bird. He's then slipped. He's one-on-one with Nick Cowes. He slipped. He's bumbled. Yeah, he's somehow fumbled his effort over Hayes. The Grecians have gone through. That's a shambles of a goal.
Yeah, well, firstly on the Simkin assist, lovely strike this. And it's that classic one where it's a little bit of an angle. It's the defender and striker go for it. It misses them completely. And of course, someone's then through on goal. But it is a great strike. Hit his target. And it's always lovely when that ends up in an assist. And yeah, I would agree with you. I've watched this several times. I can't quite figure out how he's managed to get the contact as he slipped over, whether he's even meant it, and for it to then roll into the corner. It's just, yeah, horrible moment for, and Nick Hayes had a very good game in this one, but horrible moment for Barnett to see that nestle into the corner in the way that he did. Certainly given the fact that 99 times out of 100, he slips over and this just rolls into safety. But It is what it is sometimes.
It is what it is. And finally, to penalties. So a few to mention here. First off, Scarborough's Ryan Whitley, who did save a penalty from Burton's Jack Cooper Love in the first half of that contest. It did keep the score goalless at the time, but Burton did nick a 1-0 win in the second half. Johnny Maxted, he opted to drop a couple of levels this summer, going from Newport down to Brackley. He saved twice in their shootout with Braintree. They meet Stockport in round two. Murphy Cooper back in for Stevenage, also with two stops to see off the scare of Geisley. Really good stops from the QPR Loney too, one of which was to keep Borough in the tie. Geisley were, yeah, taking the pen to win the game, but a fantastic save from him. And finally, the tie of all ties between Hensford and Gainsborough Trinity. So it's four apiece at the end of extra time, and then saves galore in the shootout. Jack Rose with two for Hensford, but Dylan Wharton with three on the bounce for Gainsborough. They meet Harrogate in the next round. But quite the shootout, this one.
Yeah, I love this. And I love the passion from the commentator. Because, yeah, like you say, phenomenal game. And to get to that point, save after save, the drama. And again, it's, you know, this is very, very you, isn't it? The beauty of the FA Cup and, you know, bringing up these sorts of games, these sorts of ties. And, yeah, such a big moment to get through to the next round. So, no, a big well done to both of them. Wharton in particular coming out victorious. Three saves in a row. Not many goalkeepers are able to do that in a penalty shootout. So, a big well done to him. Murphy Cooper as well, definitely worth a mention because he stepped back in for Stevenage in this cup game and certainly has reminded the manager just what he can do. So it'll be very interesting to see what happens there going forward. But a big well done to him to step up. And these games are tough. You know, there's so many, and obviously it's great for the teams, lower league teams coming to play the League One, League Two teams. Very little pressure on them. It can be quite difficult for goalkeepers. You know, you asked me at the very start of the show about my sort of first round experiences. It is difficult because a lot of the time you haven't really got a great deal to gain. You are expected to get through these rounds naturally. And as a goalkeeper, a lot of the time there is an expectation that you'll keep a clean sheet and it'll be a quiet day. But honestly, they can be the toughest games to play, especially with teams that might at times be a little bit more direct. Obviously, the fans being that much more passionate and, you know, everybody wanting the lower league team to win. They can be really tough games for the goalkeepers. So, a big well done to Murphy on that one in particular, because, again, I'm sure that as much as it's great for Stevens they've gone through, there'll be a lot of people that weren't necessarily cheering him on in that situation.
That is us pretty much done, Richard. We will just mention, so Scotland have gone early with their international squads for the upcoming fixtures. And there's one surprise. So Craig Gordon, still in at the ripe old age of 41. He turns 42 at the end of the year, Craig Gordon. Just an evergreen goalkeeper. Robbie McCrory in for Scotland. Obviously, capitalising on his move to Kilmarnock from Rangers. So good to see him involved. But the big surprise is Kieran Slicker in from Ipswich Town. Yet to play a senior game for Ipswich. Was at Manchester City, of course, spent a bit of time on loan at Rochdale, but now very much at Ipswich and involved with Scotland.
Yeah, no, fantastic for him. Played a lot of games at 21s level, and it's quite an interesting one because it looked likely that he might go out on loan this summer. Obviously, Ipswich signed him the summer before, had a season at the club and really built his way into the club. The club obviously really like him. I know the goalkeeper coach there is a big, big fan of his and big hopes for what he could do. But the expectation was that he was going to go on loan, maybe League One in the summer, maybe the SPL. But then again, it's a big compliment to him in that the manager saw him more than capable to play that three role in the Premier League at Ipswich, which is great. But at the same time, he's not necessarily getting the eyes on him that you might get if you're playing League One football, like, you know, so many at the moment. Joe Whitworth being a great example, he's really adding to his CV at the moment. But then to get this sort of recognition from the Scotland national team, which again will no doubt be on the work that he's done with the 21s and the fact that Ipswich have such faith in him, a massive well done to him and a fantastic experience.
Yeah, really good stuff from him. And to finish, we are going to just comment on a video that went viral over the weekend. And this was in the Southern Counties East Premier Division. That's part of SCEFL, as they call it, the Southern Counties East Football League. And it was a game involving Bearsted and Fisher. And the goalkeeper in question was Frankie Leonard. So like I said, this has gone viral. Frankie has made quite a remarkable save where he's, and we spoke about Victor Johansson earlier on in the podcast being caught up, tangled in the net. That's the flip side of being caught up in the net compared to this, which is quite triumphant for Frankie Leonard, who has made quite a remarkable save.
Oh, it's ridiculous. It's ridiculous. He's in the goal. He is, like you say, I felt for him because he's trying to get out of the net. Like, there's nothing he can do on the initial one. It's hit the bar, it's come out. The guy is, what, 3 yards out? I'm sure if you were to do the XG on this, this is like 99% a goal. But somehow he's managed to fight with the net, which he's tangled in, got himself ahead of the goal line, taken the whole goal with him, and the reaction save is top to then keep the ball out of the net while you're tangled in the net. I don't know how he's quite managed to do it, but I've got no surprise this has gone viral because it's a phenomenal save and at the same time quite amusing to watch. You know, him being, you wouldn't see that in the Premier League, the Championship, I'm sure, but he's effectively taken the whole goal with him as he's able to then keep the ball out the net. Top, top save.
You did ask me as well whether I'd sort out Victor Johansson to get his take on what happened with him and Ben Gibson. I've got one better, Richard. And we've got Frankie on the show because it is time for one of these. Yes, Text Talk has returned and Frankie's here to tell his story.
Hi, it's Frankie Leonard from Bearsted FC and I'm going to speak about my save over the weekend against Fisher in the Scheffel Premier Division. Yeah, so what happened was really, we had a throw in and I come short to get the throw and it sort of bounced up. I took a touch and one of their players was pressing me quite hard, to be fair. So what I had to do was take an extra touch to then try and get it out of my feet to try and whack it down the line, which I did so, but I didn't get a good enough clearance on it. So then I started running back into my goal because I was quite a far way out. Basically, yeah, their left back got it under control and just whacked it from miles out. And then I was running back and I was just hoping it was going over. And then I see it dropping right next to me as I got to goal. And obviously it crashed off the bar and then my momentum just went straight into the goal. And literally at that moment, I could feel that I was stuck in the goal. And then I could see one of their players running in and I was like, I've just got to try and be big, jump out, make myself as big as possible. So it wasn't really having much time to react. It was literally just try and get out as far as possible to the player to try and stop them from scoring. And luckily, as you can see from the videos, yeah, I saved it. It hit me. Some people said that it looked like it hit my hand or hit my arm or whatever, but it hit me straight in the face, which is, you take it as a keeper. So it saved it my face and I was still caught up in the goal after the ball rebounded out. And luckily they didn't score from the rebound. So yeah, it's probably one of the weirdest saves I've made, but probably one of the best saves that I've made as well. So that was my save against Fisher for Bearsted.
So that was Frankie there. Great to hear from him. I always like to give these guys a bit of coverage as well, just give their stories. So he started playing for local clubs as a striker. It's classic, isn't it? You hear this a lot of time with goalkeepers. Up until he was about 16 years old, he only played in goal for his school teams in that time. He then made his debut for Tunbridge Wells at 17 years old, ironically against Fisher. He then played for other teams throughout Scheffel, Larkfield, Meridian. Now he's at Bearsted. He actually played for Rising Ballers. I don't know whether you've heard of them. Obviously, they're a kind of a global media company, I believe, but they have a team, don't they, that the likes of Illiman Ndiaye played for when he first came to the country. Jay Clark, who's now at Gillingham, I believe. And he's played for SC Dons as well, the famous YouTube team who are known for their goalkeepers. But it's just nice to give these guys a bit of coverage on their journey into goalkeeping.
Yeah, absolutely. Quite the journey as well, by the sounds of things. And again, we say it so often on the pod, but it's so hard for goalkeepers to actually get notoriety, you know, goalkeepers to move up the levels. But it's moments like this that can just sometimes shine a bit of a light on what some of the younger goalkeepers, when you have a moment like this, if nothing else, again, it just gives that little bit more publicity and maybe the odd eye on you and whatever that next step might be. Again, it's a nice thing for the CV. So big well done to him.
Richard, thank you.
Matthew, thank you.
This has been the Goalkeepers Union podcast, Between the Sticks, Keepers
Away.